Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Coram Deo Church and Pastor Chris Himmelman of First City Church. On Wednesdays, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about summertime pursuits. It's the annual Q&A episode.
Yes.
Where I just ask you guys a couple of things, see what you're up to.
Listeners who've been thinking too hard about things like AI are so glad right now. They're like, thank you for not making me ponder the end of human existence or something like that.
That's
you
know? Me.
Unless that's what we're pondering this summer.
Maybe it is.
Maybe that's
we'll find
all
out.
We're about this summer.
Here we go, Chris.
Yeah. So I think we should kick things off with, let's do the classic, what are you guys reading? Because I do feel like people are always interested in that. And you're also all reading a lot.
Yes. All right. Who's starting? Dusty White.
Okay.
What are you reading?
I was recently on a trip with my wife. So I thought, okay, this is the moment. I'm going to be by the beach. I got to read beach like things. So I read actually
Romanticy.
I read most
Romanticy.
I read probably 70. Yeah. Lots of Romanticy. Easy. I read, most of the Atlantic May and June.
Yeah.
Took both of them because they travel well.
Yeah, they do.
Mm-hmm. There's some of those articles that you're skipping. But I started rereading On the Beach, Shop Class for Soulcraft. You know,
That's a great book.
2010 book.
That's a great book.
So good. Also have been reading with JC, Good News at Rock Bottom by Ray Ortland. Hmm. Small little book based on Isaiah 57:15. And there's more, but I would just mention this one. How to Know a Person.
Oh, yeah.
By Brooks. I got
you
that.
Yeah, you gave me that, yeah.
I'm rereading it. It was so good. I know that a lot of people have read this, but I'm rereading it because of all the insights he gives, but also all the people he references. Mm. It's one of those footnote books where you're like, if I had the time, I would go read all of these too. But so there's a few. There's more. Mm. Praying Like Monks, Living Like Fools by Tyler Staton. Also reading that on prayer.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of that book. I don't know much about it.
The reason I got that, I didn't buy the book. We have one of those little library things in our neighborhood.
Oh, yeah.
It was in there? Library.
And my 10-year-old daughter brings it to me. She goes, Daddy, I thought this looked like a book. Do you have this book? It looks like a book you would like.
That's awesome.
And I was like, oh, I've heard of this book, but I haven't read it. Thanks for grabbing it. So
it's awesome.
Free from the neighborhood.
Chris?
So what have I been reading? The past few months, I have been reading a number of articles from the Journal of the Evangelical Homiletics Society. Hmm. I just wanted to read some more stuff on preaching. That was a little more academic. Not necessarily. I mean, and, you know, some of the stuff they talk about is a little more practical, but just some, you know, what are people who have PhDs and who think about preaching at a higher level, academic level, the philosophy and theology of preaching and things. And so I've been enjoying it. It's a pretty accessible journal. I think the articles are largely well written. So that's been fun. I'm also reading a couple books on essentially the harmonization of the gospels and in that both talking about, hey, what are distinct about each gospels and kind of the thematic distinctions, but then also how are these kind of playing off of each other? Part of that is because we're, several of us in our church are writing our fall Bible study, which is going to be on the ministry of Jesus. And so going to draw from different gospels and kind of synthesize some things together. So enjoying some of that, just it's a little, you know, textual criticism, some biblical, just good biblical theology in some ways too. And just reading kind of like, hey, the genre of the gospels, kind of the literary structure of that. And then kind of on the literature end, my goal is to read through Don Quixote.
Ooh.
I picked it up after we got back from Spain last summer. And I've read excerpts, but I've not read the whole thing. And so I started it, like when we got back from Spain, I started it and then just, you know, put it aside. And so I'm like, okay, this summer I'm actually going to read the whole thing. So that's kind of my literature side, the goal for the summer.
Amazing. What's your goal in reading the sort of academic side of the preaching books? Is it for your own development or is it just for sort of like a wider knowledge base?
Yeah, I think kind of both and. you know, I love thinking about preaching. I love just considering growth, personal growth, but I realize a lot of what I read is more in kind of the mechanics and the practical side of it, which again, there's good pieces of that, but like, what are guys thinking about with preaching, like high level academic kind of trends and thoughts? And I came across an article. It wasn't in this journal, but kind of in pursuit of finding these things, came across an article that was, I don't know how many years ago it was released, but kind of challenging the idea of a single main point in a sermon and kind of saying, hey, that's not how the Bible, like how texts in scripture work. And so when you do that, here's the challenges with that.
No interns at Quorum Deo are allowed to listen to this.
Right? Yeah, no, I know.
Once you've been preaching for 10 years, yeah, then no, you can
and that
think
was my
this.
Point. Like, so our preaching team, we went through parts of the article, and the thing was, is the article, I don't feel like it made a compelling case, but I actually felt like the case that it made is a way to enhance that kind of preaching. And, but that was the point when we were going through this at our preaching team.
You like doubled down on it.
Yeah. It's like this, you're convincing me all the more this is what you should do. But it's like, if you're going to break the rule, you first have to be good at the rule.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And so, yes, you have to be preaching, nail this first before you can start tweaking it. And so that kind of came out of that discussion. So,
man, Chris, that's really cool that you're taking something that's already your craft that you're good at and trying to just read more deeply in it. That's encouraging.
Yeah, it's very life-giving. I realized this too. It was like, I'm a learner. And so sometimes just taking in that information, it just kind of rejuvenates. Because preaching is also a grind. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that this is actually given a little more pep just in my preparation and kind of energy for preaching. So it's been fruitful.
I am doing super nerdy things. Mainly, I decided I want to try to read deeply in a couple authors. So I made a goal for myself that I want to read everything Richard Lovelace wrote, which Ooh. Isn't very much stuff. But all his interest is in the area of renewal. And so he's such a knowledgeable voice in that area. And I think he wrote a total of 4 books. So, and I've only read one of them. I've read Dynamics of Spiritual Life, which I've referred people to for years. But he wrote a book on Cotton Mather, that his doctoral dissertation at Princeton was on the American Pietism of Cotton Mather. So I bought that one. It's out of print. You can only buy it used. So I've already read that one.
Was it like $300?
No, it was actually like $3.
Okay, good.
Because who wants to read this? Yeah. No one except me.
Yeah.
So I got it super cheap. It was a fascinating read to see Lovelace's thinking about that, but more importantly to realize, oh, this is the colonial New England part of American history I don't think very much about, nor do really many people, because we sort of imagine, I mean, especially with the success of something like Hamilton, we're into the founding father era. We all think about the Revolutionary War and the 4th of July and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the first presidency, all that stuff is like very stuff we think a lot about. But it's interesting to think about colonial New England, Boston in 1700, which is when Cotton Mather, you know, he was one of the first congregational ministers in Boston. He was instrumental in finding inoculation against smallpox. He was instrumental in the Salem witch trials, prosecuting the Salem, defending the Salem witch trials, which he's very pilloried for later in history. So, but he's just an interesting figure, and it's an interesting season in American history. It's back when really the Great Awakening and the Puritans are defining what America is. New England is very much an explicitly Christian kind of place. There's a lot of optimism about the future because everybody's like, it's a new world and it's a new start. And, you know, you get a really interesting picture of colonial New England. But anyway, so I read Lovelace's stuff. I'm also trying to read deeply in Alistair MacIntyre, who just passed away a few weeks ago at the age of 96. He's probably the most important philosopher of the last 100 years. He's written a ton. He's hard to read because he's super intelligent. And so you realize like this guy's read, of the people this guy has read, I have read maybe 10% of what he's talking about, you know. But he's so important in specifically the philosophy of ethics that I felt like I want to read more of what he wrote. And so I'm working on a couple of his books right now. So I'm sort of trying to go deep in Richard Lovelace and deep in Alistair MacIntyre. And who knows whether that will have any particular connection to what I do when it comes to preaching and writing, but I enjoy just sort of like getting inside the mind of a thinker and trying to understand what are they working on and what are they seeing that I'm not seeing, and what work are they doing to try to connect this to their world that helps me do the same thing in my world. So that's what I'm reading.
Also, you'll probably talk about this later down the road, but just give us a quick tease on the thing you did for TGC on freedom and and that.
Thank you.
That required some reading and thinking.
Yeah, thank you. I flew to New York a few weeks back to film a short film project on the cultural narrative of freedom. I've tried to explain this to people, and I don't feel like I'm doing a good job explaining it, because I talked to someone on the phone today, and they're like, yeah, I read that thing you said. It sounds real heady. And I was like, oh, well, then I'm not explaining it well. Basically, when Tim Keller passed away, he was doing some work on trying to articulate what are the major cultural narratives of modern Western culture. Think about like what all the things we have said that kind of started with James K. Smith, and when he started thinking about cultural liturgies, you know, things that form us. So James K. Smith was focused on things like stuff that we do that forms us, like when we put our hands over our heart, when we say the Pledge of Allegiance, or when they play the Star Spangled Banner. You know, there's a certain thing that we're doing there that's kind of liturgical. Keller's interest is more in what are the stories our culture is telling that just sort of we take them for granted. There's a certain view of freedom. There's a certain view of justice. There's a certain view of independence. There's a certain view of happiness. So he had defined these six or seven cultural stories that he felt like our neighbors are mostly shaped by these seven narratives. What could we do to try to pull back the curtain on those narratives and show how they shape what we hear and what we see? So the Keller Center is trying to do some work to take that work that Tim had done in a sort of rudimentary way and bring it to some kind of fullness in a way that can help the church. So, you know, one of the things we're doing is filming a video curriculum that will be for, you know, youth ministries, small groups, churches, where the idea is, hey, let's watch a 10-minute video on this cultural narrative. And then how does the gospel critique that cultural narrative? Where does it affirm it and where does it critique it? So I was tasked with the task of, hey, take the cultural narrative of freedom, Bob, and write us a 10-minute script and then come and record, come and do the work on camera to talk about it. So over the past 6 months, I've been working on that project. I had some help on our team from Aaron Maddox and Kevin Huddleston to just help think through that cultural narrative and put some language around it. I took that and refined it, got it into a script, and then got to go film in New York for a few days trying to just talk about this. So the idea is when you watch this, Dusty, you will see me on the screen helping you think about, hey, when we as Americans talk about liberty, there's a certain set of things that we think that means. And here's where that breaks down, and here's how the gospel would both subvert and fulfill that narrative, right? So there's ways in which the gospel subverts our American understanding of freedom, but actually it's the gospel that fulfills that in the fullest way. So as I describe it, you know, it can sound a little bit intellectual, but the finished product, hopefully the average Christian will watch that and go, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Like, I see how I have inherited a certain understanding of freedom because I live in a world where we fly the American flag and we have the Statue of Liberty and we talk about, you know, the land of opportunity and so forth. And I want to understand how the Bible's vision of freedom is a little bit different from that.
Yeah. It's a 10-minute video. A lot of work went into it. I'm sure it'll be helpful when we get to see it. So thanks for doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to sit on a boat in front of the Statue of Liberty. At least that's a picture I saw.
It was
pretty cool.
Guys,
it looked cold though.
Yeah, it did look a little miserable.
Here's the bad news. It was spring in New York. We were hoping for like a beautiful sunny day where you get that shot of the Statue of Liberty that everybody wants on their postcard. And instead it was just like a cloudy, rainy, messy day.
Camille in Long Island right now is like, yep.
She's like, that's what it's like here. But but to your point, Bethany, the producer, the guy who was in charge of directing the videos, was like, hey, my plan was we just take the ferry to the Statue of Liberty and we film this while the ferry is on the way there. But he said, then I realized you're on a ferry with 300 other people and it's going to be hard to like capture the stuff we need on a ferry. So he said, instead, I just chartered us a boat.
Wow.
So we were with this boat captain named David, who's the coolest guy ever. And he just like drove us out on the harbor on his little boat and just like parked it there, you know, in front of the Statue of Liberty. And we were like bobbing up and down on the water. And then we filmed this video and like over my shoulder, you just see there's the Statue of Liberty. It was really cool. And what you won't see on the video is that the ferries kept going by like every 5 minutes and they would make these huge waves. Oh, sure. So literally there's parts in the video where the boat was like almost turning like 45 degrees both directions. And I was like holding on and trying to like talk to a camera at the same time. It was very,
you don't get seasick. Do
very
you?
Crazy. That's I do little, not thankfully okay, because good. It was,
I would have, it was rather would have not survived.
Yeah.
Okay. What are you guys thinking about?
Woo. Mm. Wow. That's a big question.
What am I thinking about? So many things, Bethany. I don't know if I can share all the things that I think about.
Dusty.
What are some things you're pondering?
I mean, I'm sitting here with two very thoughtful thinking kinds of guys. So I'll go first and be short. I'm pondering two things. Okay. One of them is I'm curious to see what resiliency looks like in the next generation. Hmm. And what I mean by that is like my son is 16 and I'm curious what he and his peers are going to look like when it comes to grit. Mm. And especially in light of the new, you know, the Quiet Revival stuff. And my first thought when we read the Quiet Revival, you know, pamphlet, I guess you would call it, document was, okay, this is beautiful and wonderful, but what is, when this generation meets opposition, especially in their faith, what's it going to look like? So I'm curious about that. I mentioned that I was on vacation with my wife and we had this very deep conversation about body contouring. Okay.
Now here, well, I did not have that on my bingo card.
I'm sure you didn't, but let me just mention it.
A deep conversation.
And I need to preface this whole thing with like, if you've had body contouring or desire it, cool. We're still friends. I love that. I'm not making this a moral thing.
Is that a new way of saying plastic surgery?
That's my way of saying, I think there's a lot of different ways to enhance your body.
Gotcha.
And so it's a junk drawer term for me to say,
okay.
Yeah. To
okay.
say plastic surgery okay. or probably a number of things. Who knows? Yeah. My point here is we had this conversation about, you know, we're on the beach. Okay. So you can use your imagination on what I mean by body contouring, but use it in a holy way. And my point is, what's it going to look like for Christians over the next couple of decades when it comes to accepting the body that the Lord has given them? And what does that look like? Like, how do we do that? Especially in a culture where we can change our bodies, get whatever bodies we want and enhance them and do whatever we want. Mm. So I'm not saying like, I have a position on this and everybody should listen to me. I am saying like, that's going to be interesting and we'll see where that goes, you know? So I was thinking about it. I was like, well, this is weird. Like, what's it look like to be a Christian in this particular day, especially when women, Bethany, are just getting onslaughted with, hey, you don't like this? Tweak it, change it, do your thing.
Yep.
So two things I'm thinking about. One, and we've talked about this on the podcast, is kind of the vibe shift that is going on in our culture, to what degree that's happening.
Olivia Grant said, I can never use the phrase vibe shift again.
Okay.
Well, just to call her out, because I like the phrase, but she was like, hey, cool. You guys have said that so many times. I'm just putting a moratorium on it.
It's just overused.
Yeah. She feels it's overused, but I don't know. It's a good way to describe whatever it is that we're talking about.
So there was an article, I think, on Mirror Orthodoxy that came out maybe a week or two ago that was essentially like saying, embrace the cringe, be hopeful, be sincere, those things that kind of are Gen X years where sincerity was kind of looked down upon and now it seems to be a virtue. And so we talked about that as a staff and just kind of thinking through, hey, if this is kind of where we're at as a culture in some ways and, you know, still kind of figuring out what's going to hold and stick and what's just kind of, you know, a passing vibe. but just kind of giving some thought of, hey, what's kind of going on right now and how does that affect the ways that we are engaging people as a church? And the other thing that I've been thinking about is building institutional trust. How do you build institutional trust?
Have you figured that out yet?
I was going to say, how do you?
Yeah, that's, we have had a couple of interesting, things where we had to change our bylaws. We've made a couple of changes to our bylaws recently. And we are also in the process of making some big decisions related to, potentially building a building or, you know, some stuff with church planting. And so there's some things, and then there's some things kind of brewing of potential changes as a church. And so we're just working through kind of a unique season and how are we building trust in our decision? Like when we make decisions as elders and put them before our congregation, some of those, you know, the congregation responds to with an affirmation. Some of them, they're just like, hey, this is what you guys are doing. Cool. But we also know that some of these decisions people don't agree with. And how can we still build trust even when you disagree with the decision we're making? And so have been doing some thinking about that. We've had some conversations with people in our church. We had a members meeting back in May where we presented some of these changes. And so have been in some good dialogue with our church and as elders have been thinking through this. So, I don't know if I have any grand answers, but, I do know I'm learning, you know, just as far as, you know, communication, the importance of communication, the importance of getting ahead of things where it's not, hey, this decision was made. We're just telling you about it. Are there ways in which to say, hey, we're in the process of making this decision. Here's where we're likely headed. What do you think? And so giving people time to respond before the decision is kind of like, hey, well, the decision's been made. Because I think one of the things that we learned is people are like, well, what do you want me to say? The decision's been made, you know? So I don't know. It's been a good process. It's been a learning process. But one that I think the Lord has been using at this time in our church to say, hey, as we move forward with some changes, with some growth, that attention to institutional trust is going to be important.
I have been thinking about a couple of things. One is virtue. I'm trying to do a lot of work around the question of, in the movement that we call gospel-centered Christianity, even though that term has gotten very watered down and is used in a lot of different ways, but in that tribe, how do we connect that to the reality of virtue and obedience and formation? I think one of the unanswered questions, one of the gaps in our understanding of the gospel is how does it connect to just the fact that actually I learn to obey by obeying? I learn to be persistent or to have grit by getting up again and walking forward. How do we talk about cultivating virtue? And I'm just convinced that the Protestant world hasn't thought very deeply about this. Some people have, but I think the thinkers are few and far between. And so I'm trying to ask just how can I help us do some work around this area? So I actually have a little group I put together of some friends of mine with PhDs who are really good thinkers. And I just have them come over to my house every couple months and we just do some thought around virtue. And it's been really fascinating for me. And I'm trying to do some reading in this category too. It's part of why I'm reading Alistair McIntyre, because he's one of the philosophers who's done the most work in this area, and trying to understand how do we reconnect a high view of the gospel with a high view of the cultivation of virtue and building habits of doing the right thing over time. I think that's an interesting question. The other thing I've been thinking a lot about kind of connects with something you said, Dusty, is the development of young leaders. You know, I'm in my 50s now. I want to be investing in the next generation of leaders in the church. I am intrigued by the fact that I'm not sure I know how to do that well. I'm an intuitive kind of leader. So if somebody wants to be a leader and they're already sort of self-driven, I can help them figure that out. For people that need help figuring out who am I, what should I do, what direction should I go, what gifts do I have and don't have, you know, they just need more of the formative pieces. Sometimes I get lost and like, I don't know how to do that well. And so, but I have to do that well to invest in a generation that needs more of that kind of work. You know, there's a lot of the people in my kids' generation that just like, they need deeper formation. Yep. They need resilience. Yep. They need to learn how to try and fail. They need to learn how to, you know, how to get up and do it again and those kinds of things. And I've just been thinking a lot about how do I need to grow as a leader in that area? And how can I be a more developmental kind of leader? And I don't have a lot of answers to that question, but I'm putting some thought around that. How do I grow in the ways I am developing younger leaders toward the capacity that they probably have, but it's untapped? And what's challenging about that to me is, for me, and I don't know if this is generational or dispositional, but for me, I just sort of needed a playground, a sandbox to play in. Like, hey, go build something over here. And then when you build it, some other more mature leader will speak into it and say, hey, this is good, this is bad, change this, tweak that. That's not how you do it. I wanted to sort of be very hands-on in my own development. I see in a lot of younger leaders a hesitancy to do that because they're not sure what to give themselves to. And so I want to learn how to speak into that earlier and just say, hey, here's what you seem to be good at. What if you tried this? And what would it mean for you to just work on this area and see how it goes? And yeah, so I feel a need for growth in my own leadership there. And I'm trying to put some thought around that. So those are, and then I'm thinking about stuff like AI. And I mean, there's complicated. I feel like there is going to be a very complicated season in the next 10 years surrounding technology. And it's interesting how it connects to what you said about body contouring. It's basically, we have the affluence and the ability to just do a lot of stuff that humans haven't been able to do before. Everything from changing our bodies to building AI technology to, you know, building robots. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff that the pace of technological change is moving so fast that we're not asking the ethical questions underneath it. And I just think man, that's going to continue to be the church's challenge. And I'm not sure how to get ahead of that. But a lot of that is on my mind of just how do we need to think around categories related to technology? And how can I help to push those conversations forward?
Bethany, your turn. What are you reading or thinking about?
I was just laughing because I feel like I'm not thinking about anything other than parenting an almost 2-year-old, which is
that's deep
full time, baby.
A trip.
That's deep stuff.
It's a trip. Reading, I feel like, you know, my reading list compared to your guys's is it's more heavy on the fiction.
Stop. Fiction is good.
But I was thinking, we just got finished. I had the joy of being a part of a small group of creatives and artists at Corumdale this last year that we read through the book, A Scribbling in the Sand by Michael Card. Yes, that Michael Card. Mm. You're probably humming. What is his famous song? Do you guys know?
Gosh.
Step by Step. That's the one I think of. Oh, yeah. Michael Card.
A lot of 80s Christian music.
A lot of
music.
80s, 90s contemporary Christian music. Yeah. Anyways, he wrote a book called Scribbling in the Sand. And it's about... It's for artists, Christian artists, and he's just doing a lot of good thinking on what it means to be an artist and to be a Christian and making art. And so it was just really fun to, we finished that up in May, just think about that or to read that book and think about it with a group of creative people.
Yeah, that's fun.
But yeah, that's really it.
Love it.
That's awesome.
Final question. What are you guys watching? Or if you're not watching anything, what are you listening to? Assuming it's a podcast or maybe it's not, maybe it's music.
All right. So the Earnhardt documentary, Dale Earnhardt, it's on, it's on Amazon Prime.
I did not really see that coming. Okay.
Oh yeah. I love me some NASCAR.
I'll go do that.
Yeah.
I'll go do that.
Some NASCAR. And Dale Earnhardt is just a fascinating, he's like a classic, American cowboy kind of thing.
Yeah,
like
the Michael Jordan of
NASCAR. He's just a larger than life guy. And he has an 8th grade education. I mean, it's really fascinating the level of success that guy had. And he's got father wounds. I mean, there's just a really fascinating story there. So,
that's my guy. I got to go. Yeah. I'm going right now. Sorry, guys. I got to go.
It's an amazing, documentary. I also just love NASCAR. I grew up watching stock car racing. So it's going back to my childhood in some ways. And then I'm waiting for the next season of The Bear, Bethany. I think it comes out. I think it will be out by the time this podcast is out. So,
That's
so great. I'm looking forward to that.
It's going to be so good.
There'll be a ton of F words and I will have to.
So many.
Yeah. So many. So much language. But man, that show is provocative. I love it. And then I've been listening a lot to this podcast called All In, which you might be familiar with. It's some Silicon Valley guys. I'm just trying to get my mind in that world, the people that think about AI and are very techno-optimist, because I disagree with them in a lot of ways, but I just want to sort of get in and understand from their perspective, why are they optimistic? What are they thinking about? It's an entertaining podcast. They do a good job. It's a good podcast at the level of production and stuff like that. But so I've been listening to that just to try to immerse myself in that world a little bit and familiarize myself with some of the conversations.
Mindy and I are rewatching Monk.
Nice.
TV series Monk.
Ooh, yeah.
So one of our favorites. There's a handful of shows that we recycle pretty regularly. That's one of them. So working our way through that. And a show we haven't started but are really excited to start once life kind of settles down is season two of Andor. Mm. And so if you haven't seen season one, probably one of the best Star Wars shows that is out there. And so
my husband
if there is
loves
a thing,
it.
Insert yeah. eye roll.
No, you should watch.
Okay.
If you're a Star Wars skeptic, because in many ways it's not Star Wars.
Yeah. It's on another level. Yeah, it's good.
It's in the Star Wars universe, but it's political thriller, political intrigue. It's about the kind of the beginnings of the revolution against the Empire. And so, you know, you strip out kind of the mystical stuff and kind of the corny stuff. And it's very serious, very character driven. Each episode's kind of a slow burn and just kind of builds. And so we loved the first season. So
unrelated, what I'm fascinated by is that we're still living in George Lucas's imaginative universe 50 years later. The fascinating thing.
We're gonna be living in it for a while.
That guy built a world that we're still writing stories about.
Yeah. Yeah. The fact that it's that versatile.
Yeah.
I mean, cause there has been some stuff that, you know, within the Star Wars universe that's come out the past few years, that's just terrible. But this is, I mean, this is like as good of TV as you're going to find. So super excited. We've heard that the reviews are really good. Season two does not disappoint. So excited to start that.
Well, back by big disappointment.
Wow.
The only thing I'm watching right now is baseball.
That's it. That's good.
Fair.
Anything to do with baseball. I will watch almost any baseball game.
Did you watch Oklahoma lose terribly?
Shut up.
And
wait, well, no, sorry.
You thought I'd say Nebraska.
I thought you were going to bring up the 17-1 Husker lost from Oklahoma.
And then we lost 2 days later, almost as bad.
Yeah,
so.
That's fair. My son said, I can't, he was talking with Lewis and he said, I cannot engage any Thunes for the next few months. they're just going to haze me on that. That was a while ago. But so yeah, that's it. And I've learned so much about myself lately when it comes to TV, because I've never been a TV guy. But like I was away with Colbin on a trip. We had a VRBO. He was away with some buddies. The TV didn't turn on. JC and I went on vacation. The TV turned on one time. We watched Forrest Gump. That was it. I'm like, this is weird. Like I just read or sit in silence.
Praise
sometimes.
The Lord, man. That's just good.
Yeah. I drive in silence.
Good for you.
So it's
you're
weird.
You're not listening or watching anything.
We need more silence in our lives.
Well, I probably, I guess I got enough going on in my brain that I don't need.
Speaking more of TV baseball. Drama. I was really rooting for Creighton to see, you know, if
they almost got there.
But, one of my neighbors and best friends growing up, her nephew is the best hitter for Creighton.
Wow.
Nolan Sailors. Yeah. That's her nephew. So grew up with her and her brother, Nolan's dad was like 6 years older than us. So I wasn't as good of friends with him, but, so it's just kind of cool. It's like, oh,
that's
kind of
cool.
Connection to Creighton baseball.
And some kid from Concordia is like one of their awesome pitchers too. So yeah,
there's a lot of Omaha kids on that team.
Creighton just can't ever really
crack it into the upper echelon. Yeah.
Oklahoma's been doing well though the last couple of years.
Yeah. We keep getting close and then losing, but that's okay. That's baseball for you.
I just loved that it started off with all these SEC teams and now they're down. People are like, man, there could be six teams at the College World Series from the SEC. And now at best three, maybe.
Yeah.
It's like,
guys, the SEC hype is every sport all the time. It's just like, you know, whatever. Yeah. It's like, we're the elite. Oklahoma's in the SEC and it drives me crazy. Cause I'm like, guys, whatever. It's just a conference, you know. Bethany.
I like how it turned into a sports podcast.
Sorry. Bethany, what are you listening to or watching? We know you're going to have some good answers.
Honestly, though, I haven't been watching much. I'm thinking, is there anything good my husband and I, Chris, we rewatched Rogue One recently. And I was like, that's a great, that was a great movie. I love that movie. The only thing I could really think of that, like, I would feel like captured me recently was the show Severance, which I'm gonna, you guys, I would love to talk to anybody who wants to talk about it. I will talk to them about it.
I watched the free episode to see if I wanted to pay for the Apple TV Plus to watch the rest. And I was like,
no,
they didn't sell me. I was like, it was interesting, but because not
enough.
You gotta
watch the whole.
Okay. So I got like, so I just said, I don't watch TV, but I do remember getting like three or four episodes deep, which is a lot for me.
Yeah. And you gotta keep going. Got to keep going. Yeah. It's so good. Season two came out back in January, and there was a group of us here at Corumdeo who may or may not have a Slack channel dedicated to theorizing about Severance.
Hey, we're going to tighten up our Slack policies. put that on your list.
Who's managing that?
No, it was great. We all got together and watched the finale together. It was awesome. But yeah, it's just a good thriller type show to watch and think about.
It's kind of crazy.
Hey, speaking of summertime, I just want listeners to know, since the 4th of July holiday is around the corner, we are going to take a couple weeks off of the podcast because everybody's doing various things, traveling and whatnot. So we will have a couple weeks off. So you'll see a couple weeks in your feed where no new Wednesday conversations come up. So this is your chance to catch up on past episodes. I think it's only a 1 week break, maybe a 2 week break. So it's not going to be long. But we are going to take a little bit of time off over the 4th of July holiday. So just wanted to mention that so that you're not confused when you're like, wait, is my iPhone not working right? Did someone forget to upload the podcast, etc.? Nope, we just didn't record one.
Gives you plenty of time to think about what kind of snacks you're going to bring.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah.
That's the truth.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, thank you for listening in. We pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We love to hear from listeners, so if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.